This is a podcast from RTE Radio 1.
Hello and welcome to Passing the Picket. The subject of this week's programme is slightly unusual in that there was no strike or no pickets involved in the dispute in question. Indeed, nor was there a trade union. But these factors are actually central to the cause of the one-day action taken by Gardaí on the 1st of May 1998, which will forever be remembered as the day the Gardaí caught blue flu.
There's power in the factory, power in the land, power in the hand of the worker.
A one-day work stoppage by rank-and-file Gardaí has begun. The action in support of a pay claim was organised by the Gardaí Representative Association, which has urged its members to report sick instead of going on duty.
The early indications from Gardaí headquarters are that as many as 80% of rank and file Gardaí all over the country have withdrawn their labour.
I've been speaking to Gardaí stations in 10 different counties in the last half an hour. We haven't had a sighting of one GRA person in any of the Gardaí stations I've spoken to. We're talking about towns like Drogheda in County Louth with a population of 30,000 people. Not one rank and file Gardaí on duty this morning.
Our sisters, many far off lands, there is power in our union.
When rank and file Gardaí all over the country began phoning in sick on that Friday in May 9 years ago, their action was quickly and catchily labelled by the media as blue flu. The big question on the day, however, was why not call it what it was, a day of strike action. The reason Gardaí were at pains to point out throughout the day was that the Gardaí Representative Association and the Association of Gardaí Sergeants and Inspectors, who incidentally didn't take part in the one-day action, are not trade unions. This means that they can't call a strike, they're not affiliated to Congress, and they're outside of the national pay agreements. As PJ Stone, General Secretary of the GRA, explains, this very issue was one of the key factors which brought about the day of blue flu action.
I suppose one of the major problems we have, and this has been the situation since the foundation of the state, is that we don't have the access to other labour relations machinery that's available to most workers within the state. We don't have access to the Labour Court. We don't have access to the Labour Relations Commission. We don't even have an entitlement if there are small-time disputes within the organisation to go to a rights commissioner of the Labour Court.
You know what you're signing up to and you abide by those conditions. So everybody knows that when they join the Gardaí Síochána.
That's former Gardaí Commissioner Pat Byrne. He takes a different view on industrial relations and the Gardaí.
It does create certain elements of frustration. But at the end of the day, most people can talk through frustration and difficulties and problems, and that's at the end of the day how things are solved.
Now, I should point out at this stage that negotiations on issues of pay and conditions take place not between Gardaí and Gardaí management, but between the Gardaí and a joint negotiating team on behalf of the Departments of Justice and Finance. Bernard McDonough headed up the negotiating team in the run-up to Blue Flu, and he also takes a firm line on the issue of union membership within the Gardaí.
That's a feature of all security services here and abroad. I mean, the governments of the day take a very firm view about unionisation of security services, and anybody going into a security service has to realise that industrial action of that kind is not legal.
It's a very black day for us, and it's a pity that it had to come to this. I would have much preferred if this could have been solved within the negotiating process. But unfortunately, the government are absolutely intransigent, and they have dug in their heels, and I suppose we have dug in our heels as well.
So what's going to happen? It's just going to get worse.
Yes, it is, unfortunately, but you have to have a crucifixion before you had Christianity. So therefore, it's going to go on, and that's the bottom line.
Sunday Tribune journalist Martin Frawley was a reporter with Industrial Relations News during the lead-up to Blue Flu in the 1990s. He explained some of the other factors which were causing unrest amongst Gardaí at the time.
In about 1994, they concluded a pay deal with the government at the time, and that prompted a split right through the GRA, mainly between the Dublin-based Gardaí, who felt that the deal was heavily weighted in favour of the rural Gardaí. They basically felt that the pay deal that the GRA leadership had done was that basically they'd been sold a pup by the government and they wanted to reopen it. And at the time, public sector pay was in revolt all over the country. Nurses, prison officers, teachers, civil servants, craft workers were all revolting at the time. So the problem was that the government couldn't concede any more to the guards, because once they conceded to the guards, they'd have to concede to everybody else. This eventually then led to the formation of a breakaway group called the Garda Federation, and they were pressing to get that pay deal renegotiated and reopened. The government wouldn't let them. Now, eventually, the Garda Federation agreed to dissolve, but they were still a huge influence in the GRA, and it was their efforts to push through and reopen that deal that really caused the blue flu of the 1998, because at the time, John Ferry, who had negotiated the controversial deal 4 years earlier, had gone. And PJ Stone, the current General Secretary, was just coming in. And so there was enormous pressure on the GRA leadership to take the government to task. And the only way they could do it at the time, because they couldn't take action, was to take the blue flu.
Looking back on that time, I think that members of the Garda Síochána expected leadership from the Staff Association. I think had we not to take that particular course of action, I think we would have lost a great deal of ground with our own members. And you must remember, we were after coming through a very difficult time. We had an alternative association, the Garda Federation. People had come together on a promise, let's not forget, from the Department of Justice, Equality and Law Reform, or the Department of Justice as they were then, that once these issues, internal issues, were sorted out, then the issue of pay would be addressed in a very meaningful way. And I can tell you, you know, people whom had set up or were about, who were part of an alternative structure, would have used that opportunity again had we not to take a very strong position in respect of our pay, because we were promised that we were going to be looked after.
That deal that I was referring to earlier, the 1994 deal, that favoured the rural-based Gardaí, so the Dublin-based Gardaí felt, and that an awful lot of that was to do with the overtime, the pensionability of allowances. And there was a general great frustration within the Guards, because 80% of the Garda force are Gardaí, so they have very little chance of promotion. And there was no way of addressing that, and they couldn't get that across. So they really were kind of cornered. They couldn't go anywhere. They couldn't take industrial action, so eventually they decided that at a very rancorous GRA conference meeting to take sick leave en masse. Now, this wasn't fully supported throughout the Guards, but it was very, very suddenly taken. They had initially said that they would give the government a bit of notice, but they didn't. They took it very, very suddenly, and they took everybody by surprise.
One of the key issues at the time where Garda management was involved was a rostering system, which we agreed upon to try out in a number of divisions, successfully, I may say so. And there was issues of 39-hour weeks, and there was also the issue of pay. But it really got down to the issue of pay. And I think it's true to say, and I felt it at the time, that I think most people realised that who were interested in this particular subject and involved in it and as stakeholders, exactly where it was going to end at the end of the day. I think we all saw the end in sight, but whatever happened in the interim, that frustration reached such a peak that a decision was made to take the action they did.
I heard commentators over the last few days refer to this sickness issue, and I think we should clear it up perhaps this morning at the outset. This is a day of national protest.
Are you on strike then?
If I could just answer the question, Pat, please.
Yeah.
It's a day when thousands of guards have decided to withdraw their services in solidarity with their colleagues in support of a pay demand.
Okay, so you're on strike.
You will always have a certain percentage of those members who are out sick in any event.
Absolutely.
And for the rest of those members, the only way they can record their absenteeism is by recording it as sickness. There is no other mechanism available to them.
So they're telling lies. They're not sick, sure they're not.
They're not telling lies at all. We have.
Hang on a second now. Look, I'm sick of this kind of carry on. Either they are sick or they're not sick. If they're calling in and saying they're sick, that's a lie, if they're not sick. And that's the be-all and end-all of it. Now, I can understand you have a strategy, you have a grievance, you want to get that grievance addressed. But don't try the double think that if people call in sick and they ain't sick, that it's not a lie, because it is a lie.
We have made it very clear to Garda management, to the Minister for Justice, to his officials, to the Cabinet and to the government, that what we were engaging in today was a day of national protest when services would be withdrawn.
people took that option, some with great reluctance, in order to protest at what they felt was the failure of government to address our concerns. And as I say, you know, we were at the pin of our collar trying to find an alternative route. But because that was denied us, we were left with one option and one option only. And we took that. And that's historically going to be there, I suppose, to haunt us forever. But at the same time, it was something that had to be done at a particular time.
I think it came to a stage that frustration took over and common sense to a degree went out the window. I had a lot of interaction with the staff associations, seeking them to change the strategy or the tactic they were adopting for that particular day. I addressed their annual conference. I spoke to many delegations of the GRA and the other staff associations, but it was the GRA who were going into taking this particular line. And it seems that they were on a particular course that was very hard to divert them off of it, though I feel that if there was a little bit more goodwill on either side, it needn't have happened, because I think that I'm firmly of the view that everyone knows where the negotiations were going to end. So why not get to that in negotiation? We're going through the process that went through, which frustrated members of the GRA felt was necessary, which I personally thought was unnecessary.
Because of the fact that we were in a position whereby we didn't have any industrial relations muscle, I think that it was always expected that the Department of Justice, as our employers, would be a little bit more generous in relation to how they adapted themselves to our needs and our requirements. And I have a view during that time that there was some sort of a notion that the guards were going to have to be put into their place and that they weren't going to get a pay rise, which was commensurate with the work which we did. And on that explanation, I just want to say that the last independent pay review was 20 years prior to that. So I think we had a legitimate argument that we were not getting fair play.
In general, people will argue, well, we should have the same pay as, but some organisations, for example, the guards, their actual average earnings are quite different from the basic earnings. And indeed, Gardaí currently, if one looks at the figures, are on average amongst the highest paid of public servants. And if one are to look at the Gardaí in relation to average industrial earnings in Ireland and look at police forces in other countries in Europe as against average industrial earnings in those countries, you will find that the Gardaí in Ireland are well paid by any standard.
Well, I have outlined quite clearly in the Dáil during the week on regarding the whole question of public service pay. My colleague, the Minister of Justice, has outlined our position quite clearly also. The door is open if the Garda Representative Association wish to come to negotiation with the government within those parameters. And we are not in a position to set off a raft of public service pay claims, and Gardaí will have to know that.
They had fallen far behind, and that was one of the problems that the government had at the time, that these relativities, this is the big bugbear of the government at the time, that they'd concede a pay increase to one group, say a nurse or a teacher, and then they'd have to almost automatically give in to another group, and this gave rise to what they called these leapfrogging pay claims, so that they'd concede to one group and there'd be another group in the back door the following day. It was really, at the time, was threatening to take down the whole thing and possibly even the government with it.
Well, of course, Blue Flu was something that was put on it by people in the media. It wasn't something that we acknowledged as being the approach we were taking. What we were, I suppose, doing was we were having a day of protest. And that was brought about by absolute sheer frustration in not being able to bring the Department of Justice and the Department of Finance to a position where we all knew we were going. You see, this was based on a falsehood, because the negotiations clearly were setting out a roadmap which all of us understood would have to be adhered to. And I think, in my view, the Department of Justice, and in tandem perhaps with government at the highest levels, believed that it was more appropriate to allow the guards to take this course of action, because then we could be punished into the future. I honestly believe that they did this in order to weaken us, as opposed to what people might wrongly presume as strengthening our position. And in fact, I think they orchestrated their own mechanisms to effectively stand back and not settle the issue of our pay sooner. And I think that was a great pity, that they effectively did not do their duty properly in terms of the Gardaí Síochána. And while it's easy now for people, and we have been, you know, as I said, lambasted, we have been criticised in respect of the action which we had to take, But I think if people were absolutely brutally honest, the people who should be lambasted is the Department of Justice and Finance for allowing it to happen.
The Department of Justice and indeed the Department of Finance, who were negotiating jointly, were acting on the instructions of the government. So it would have been basically putting it up to the government. And of course, governments, at the end of the day, can't be seen to bow down in the face of intimidation by any group of workers, whether they're in the security services or in other services.
I'm just speaking for the ordinary man on the beat, and we're mad, Pat. And every Friday, we'll be out every Friday if it takes that. Now, we don't do it lightly, Pat.
Right, so irrespective of what Bertie said about this Friday, next Friday, or any Friday...
We'll fight him on the beaches, Pat.
My experience at the Garda Síochána and the staff associations, threats are made at particular times for industrial relations reasons, but I have always found, and this is what's disappointed me with Blue Flu Day, I've always found that at the end of the day, when push comes to shove, that members of the Garda Síochána of all ranks, and we are here really talking about Garda rank, but of all ranks, are very responsible and they do what is necessary. And I think we proved that over the years in times of emergencies, in times of difficulties. Something had to be done very, very quickly. Foot and mouth disease, emergency situations in relation to paramilitaries or crime, that we are able to kickstart and go straight in and confront the situation. So at times of negotiation, you hear lots of threats. 99.9% of them don't happen, but it's obviously part of the process. In other words, what I'm saying is, when push comes to shove, they go to work. But unfortunately, Blue Flu Day was the day that didn't happen.
Pat Byrne at the time was in a very difficult position. On the one hand, he couldn't countenance the situation where his Gardaí were going to take leave en masse. But on the other hand, he had a certain sympathy with the GRA and their plight and their pay plight and the fact that they had very, very little promotional prospects. And of course, he also, as the head of the Gardaí, if you like, as opposed to the Minister for Justice, he was in charge of his men as such, and he had to meet them once this row was over. He had to deal with them after it was over. So he took a very careful line not to antagonise them too much. But about a couple of weeks after the Blue Flu was over and Bertie Ahern had interceded, he began to advise them to listen to Bertie Ahern and take the opportunity to go in and sit down at the table. So, but he had a very, very difficult line to steer, Pat Byrne.
For me, as Commissioner of the Garda Síochána, having spoken to all concerned, and particularly the staff associations, the thought of the Garda Síochána not turning up for duty, I think, was a disastrous move. Some may say it wasn't. I said at the time, and prior to the taking that particular action, that we would be in the future stigmatised by the phrase and the catchphrase Blue Flu. It would always apply to members of the Garda Síochána not turning up for duty. But I do feel that it need never have happened, but for whatever reasons, it did happen. Now, it happening created a major problem for me leading up to it, because I, as Commissioner, was tasked with providing a police service to the people of Ireland. As Police Commissioner, you are also there to manage situations and manage problems and not to create bigger problems. Some commentators maintain that we should have disciplined all those people. The disciplinary regulations at the time were not enacted to deal with situations like this. We were in fact dealing with an industrial relations problem. So we had to manage that problem. So the key issue for me as Commissioner was to ensure I had enough people on the streets. I had support from other staff associations in providing people. And I must say that when I say that, I mean that the chief superintendents, the superintendents association, the association of Garda sergeants and inspectors, and also from the GRA in the sense that it was accepted and understood that probationer members of the Garda Síochána, these are people who were still on probation, but members of the GRA worked as normally, as did all student Gardaí, and as did, in fairness, the staff association, who I think everyone realised that emergency service would have to be provided, as did specialist units like the National Surveillance Unit and the Emergency Response Unit and the communications rooms around the country. So we were able to provide a police service for that particular day.
In Limerick City Centre's Henry Street Station, I called in there this morning and the front office is being manned by two sergeants and a Garda trainee.
the AGSI, who did not support the action, but were deployed on the day and were filling gaps all over the city. And that, I think, was a bit of a bad move by the Garda senior management or the justice, because the AGSI reacted a bit to that and had stated that they wouldn't be guaranteed to do that if the blue flu should happen again. They felt they were being used by the senior management and the Gardaí and by the government to fill the gaps. And they didn't like that. And they had said in no uncertain terms, and you've got to remember, they had a pay battle as well as the GRA, it's just that they weren't going down this particular route. But they had said that if it should happen again, they will just do normal duties and not fill the gaps left by the ordinary rank and file Garda.
While our association didn't participate in the blue flu, I can tell you on behalf of the general membership that we fully understood why the other association participated.
Joe Dirwan is General Secretary of the AGSI.
Remember back to that time, we're talking about the PCW, and the Gardaí were early settlers under that. And what happened thereafter was other unions came along and they were able to renegotiate a better deal. And they ended up with pay levels of 13%, whereas we ended up with a pay level of 5.5%. So immediately we're at a serious disadvantage.
One of the things that was noted about Blue Flu Day was that crime levels on the day were actually very low.
On the day itself, there was very little, there was no massive criminal activity at the time, and I think that was a kind of a source of a bit of derision at the time as well. This was pointed out all over the place, and they didn't like that. But I think maybe that the short notice given on the blue flu had taken the criminals by surprise as well, probably.
I don't know what the mindset of the criminals was at that particular time, but obviously they weren't too active on that particular day for whatever reasons. It's a serious situation, so I won't be flippant about it, but one often wonders what was in the mindset of criminality and those who carry out ordinary crimes on that day, that they didn't go to work, so far as they're concerned.
Good morning to you and welcome. Yes, it will be interesting to see if the general level of thievery and robbery and housebreaking and mugging and general vagabond and bad behaviour will increase today or not, as the case may be, with all the boys in blue off doing their thing. They should read what the Irish Independent has to say about them in a general comment, an editorial on page 12 today. Every guard in the country should read it. They won't like it. They won't like it at all, because it's headed a scandalous case of institutionalised lying. But they might like to read it or not, if they don't want to upset them.
In PR terms, however, it is pretty much undisputed by all parties involved that Blue Flu was not a good day for the guards.
It was a total disaster. Even they themselves, I mean, once the Taoiseach offered a slight pay hike for them to come back to the table, they took it willingly, because they knew that in effect he was offering them a way to get out of the hole that they had dug themselves into, and most of them wanted to get out of it and fast. I think they underestimated the public reaction, which was very hostile at the time, even derisory, and comparing that with, say, the nurses, who were full steam ahead and had total public support for their pay dispute, which was also bubbling over at the time. The Gardaí were very much taken aback by the very hostile reaction.
In a way, the Garda Síochána, and in particular, I think, the GRA, were demonised, and that perhaps makes it easier to deal with them. But commentators, of course, criticised them very, very severely. I expected all of that. Editorials criticised them. Finger was pointed at the organisation that it would do such a thing.
The term sick, you say to me that I should take on board that sickness has many different aspects.
Many different aspects. Look it up, Pat, in the Oxford English.
You're sick of the way you're being treated, and
sick,
in that sense,
fed up,
it's inaccurate.
Stressed, downhearted, down in spirit.
Had we not to be forced into that position, had the government and had the Department of Justice to negotiate honestly, then I think we would be in a much healthier and stronger position. But I think it was a conditioned response to weaken us by getting public anger, and more especially by getting media anger directed at the Garda Síochána. And I think that one of the great problems with being a member of the Garda Síochána is that we actually have to go out there and prosecute. We have to deal with issues. And we're not like nurses or perhaps firemen, whom are seem to be angels of mercy. But at the same time, we do a hell of a good job, and I believe that we were treated badly at that time.
In terms of negotiating with government in the aftermath of Blue Flu Day, Bernard McDonagh is adamant that, from his point of view, little, if nothing, had been achieved by the one-day action.
There was a sense, quite frankly, that people had broken their contracts and that this was while an irritant, etc., it certainly didn't speed up the process. In the aftermath, we're in the business of refining claims and, as it were, counterclaims, and trying to ensure that we would reach a settlement which was within the broad parameters of the pay policy of the time, which eventually we did, but it's fair to say that that Blue Foo was not particularly helpful in reaching the settlement that was eventually reached.
They eventually got a deal for 9%. Now, the next year they did come back for a little bit more, but really they got 9%, which wasn't too bad. Whilst they didn't win it hands down by any manner of means, there was an awful lot of the other public sector groups in there, particularly the teachers and even ordinary civil servants, had told the government in no uncertain terms that if they conceded anything more to the guards, they would be back in themselves for another deal. So they had yielded something out of them.
So what, if anything, were the lessons learnt from Blue Flu Day? PJ Stone.
Well, I think any organisation that doesn't look at itself from time to time has not really been effective. And certainly we had to look at the way we operated, we did our business. We had to accommodate other people within the organisation who had different views. And as a result, I think we're a much stronger and healthier organisation today.
The controversial business of Gardaí becoming either full or affiliate members of the Irish Congress of Trade Unions continues to be a major issue for the AGSI.
We have started discussions with the Congress with the view to affiliation. As you know, under the current legislation, staff associations are excluded from trade union membership. Now, we have had discussions. I must say the discussions are going well, and we are hopeful that progress can be made towards affiliation.
According to PJ Stone, the GRA, however, is unlikely to be happy with affiliate membership of Congress.
Sometimes promises of trade union membership doesn't necessarily bring you what you require. If we were a trade union in our own right and had the entitlement to use all of the industrial relation mechanisms that are available to every other worker, then certainly, yes, that would be a proper and, in my view, a very good option for everybody. But that's not what's on offer. And until such time as that's an issue that we can talk about and put on the table, then I certainly wouldn't want to be a half-hearted member of any trade union movement.
On the whole question of Gardaí becoming full members of a trade union, Bernard McDonagh remains unequivocal in his response.
That gets back to the desire of governments to ensure that the security services in all countries are not caught up in the normal industrial relations, hurly-burly, so to speak, because one can see, for example, that if they were members of the trade union organisation generally, they could get caught in disputes which were totally unrelated to their activities. So all governments, or no government that I'm aware of, deals with the police services or the army as part of the normal industrial relations machinery. I think that the arrangements as we've had them for the last 50 years have stood the test of time quite well, and I don't see them changing over the next 20, 30 years.
And for the last word on this subject, let's hear from former Garda Commissioner Pat Byrne. Does he think that Gardaí should be members of a union?
I was always of the view that members of the Garda Síochána should not be part of a trade union. But as the years went by, I often thought perhaps crunch issues might be easier to handle if they were. It would be my heart more than maybe my head guiding me in this particular light. I would like them to still be part as a staff association, not a union. There is a uniqueness, you see, about the Garda Síochána. And the uniqueness is that they are not members of trade unions, and they do a very, very difficult job, and they respond to very difficult situations where other people have gone on strike, whether it be prisons or wherever it happens. The Garda Síochána have to step in to do certain things. Would union membership create a difficulty here? Maybe it wouldn't, maybe it would. My heart says that I'd prefer to see them as a staff association. But then again, we've got to move on. And if it makes better sense from all sides that they be involved as a trade union, and it suits government and it suits the staff associations, maybe it's worth thinking about.
That's all for me for this week. Next week, I'll be looking back at the Irish Locomotive Drivers Association dispute with Iarnród Éireann, which turned train driver Brendan Ogle into a household name. So do join me then. There is power in a union.